And now I would like to present our second speaker. By the way, I don't have any information yet as to how we're going to adjust for the late start time, but I'll try to find out for you by the end of the session. Our next speaker is Dr. Robert O'Brien, who is speaking on the subject of the sound and sight of Shakespeare. And he wrote a lovely intro for me that I'd like to read verbatim very quickly. In the past, I was not a compulsive record collector. I attended a university, LSU, where I was devoted to the subject of literary criticism. After going on to my PhD at the University of Iowa, in my dissertation, I played close attention to a play written in the 18th century, and I was devoted to books, not recordings. Later, many years later, I got into cassette recordings of Shakespeare. I listened to these on the road to visit my children. My article in the Encyclopedia of Recorded Sound shows that I have become a compulsive literary record collector. Would you please welcome Dr. Robert O'Brien?
Here's work for others.
Okay. Well, what's going to happen?
That's a good question. But
in the midst, there was things on my screen exactly what I was going on to. And for some reason, it became black. A message came to it. And it belongs to him because I don't know how to deal with this. But with this handout, I hope you also have a pen because I want you to do some writing about this. The original title is at the top of that, and then I came up with, for my standard, a better title. And my subtitle is The Steps Dealing with Records of Shakespeare's Feet. Now, just go through that. What does each word mean in that subtitle? The Steps Dealing with Records of Shakespeare's Feet. That's what I see on the screen here. And we're going to just, he has to make it operate again.
So this is where the problem is right here. Because it wants to do this repair, this log repair, but it wasn't really doing it. So I'm going to try to start Windows normally.
Well, he plays with his computer. I'm going to talk to the audience. All right, you ready with those words in the list? Let's start with the title, Steps. In the title, it refers not to what a dancer does with his feet. It deals to the parts, the steps, the parts of a process. The second important word is dealing. Here it does not refer to distribute. He needs a copy.
It's okay.
Such as distribute the cards to a group of poker players. That's not what it means here. In this passage, the word dealing is a synonym of treating. In this room, the people here are accustomed to the word records, which refers to discs, played at 78 RPM, or vinyl disc 33 and a third RPM. But of course, the word records also refers to documents, evidence, typically a piece of paper with written numbers, words, diagrams, and so forth. That is a record. Basically, the word record refers to a document. It is a legal suit that the judge and jury consider records, documents, as part of evidence. That word will have both meanings in this passage. If it refers to a record in this presentation, I use that word to indicate a wax or celluloid cylinder, a 78 RPM or a 16 RPM or a 33 1/3 RPM disc, a cassette disc, a cassette tape, a CD, or whatever had or has a way to preserve a piece of sound. Each record is a preservation, the permanence of a passage of sound and proof of what was done in the past. And the last word, feet, does not refer to Shakespeare's shoes. In each passage of poetry, each part is divided into sections called feet. Those are the sections of a line of poetry. And we can refer to the line of poetry. Each line typically indicates the rhythm of each passage, each line. Each line indicates that each line ends at a point in the rhythm. A passage of prose is built on how many letters will fit on a page from margin to margin. Each foot of poetry is divided into iambics. When the first syllable is unstressed and the second stressed, such as desert or dessert. Dessert, the second syllable, which we eat after for the end of the meal. If the foot begins with the stressed syllable followed by an unstressed syllable, such as desert, the same spelling, but it has a different meaning. A combination of two stressed syllables, both of which are hit hard, such as humdrum, is referred to as a spondee. Iambic, trochaic, spondee. Without going on to a longer list of various feet, with each line in accentual syllabic meter, is divided in these sections, not free verse, which does not have such a form. The basis of this presentation is for the steps, the process of the critic and the audience using records, evidence of how the performer deals with the lines of Shakespeare's plays involving the feet of each line. Now we turn attention to the steps dealing with Shakespeare's feet. A short passage from Shakespeare's The Tragedy of Othello seems a good piece to introduce his poetry to read. Dealing with Shakespeare's work involves the meaning of this passage, but understanding involves seeing and hearing. The passage. In the appendix outline in this piece is a good place to start, which is the passage from Othello, Act 1, Scene 3, lines 76, excuse me, lines 76 through 94, and then the second part of it is 128 to 139. Now, that speech from Othello, he's talking to the Senate of the city. And he begins to talk to the senators. That begins with line 76 and goes down through line 94. Then he's interrupted, right in the middle of a line. He's interrupted with senators wanting to talk with him and bring up questions to him. And so there's a whole passage of people talking with him and his answers to them. And then at a certain point, they've gone, in their mind, they've gone far enough, and they dump back on him the problems of what he had done. And so the second part comes in on lines 128 to 139. Now, I'd like for you to just read that before you can hear the first recording of an actor to perform that.
If I can get it to start,
yeah,
I can do something with it, but it won't boot up. It's looking like it wants to crash. Do you have it on a any presentation? On
not the right now with me. I have it on my other...
The Mac.
On the Mac, but that's blocks away.
Right.
But we can deal with this, basically. All right. Enough reading?
Yeah.
Okay. We will start with the first recording of Shakespeare. The first recording of an actor. And this recording was by the brother of John Wilkes Booth. And that younger brother is is another actor of this family. There are three brothers at that point. And the younger brother objected to the Civil War and objected to what Lincoln had done in winning it. And so John Wilkes Booth went to the theater in Washington and shot, killing President Lincoln. Let me just say, his older brother was Wayne Booth. Can you imagine getting a job after your brother becomes the assassin? But that's what happened. Wayne Booth stayed on the stage around the country. And at that point, the phonograph had come out. In 85, we got into the cylinder recordings. It became a huge impact upon society. But Wayne Booth was so busy performing for the audience on the stage, he wasn't even interested in dealing with this new gadget coming along. But his daughter did want to be interested. And his daughter sent him a early phonograph and told him to order ordered his father to make a recording of his passages. And Wayne Booth, sitting in a hotel room in Chicago, he made two cylinder brown wax cylinder recordings in 1890. One of them seems to be unusable. The other recording, you have lots of copies available. And, of course, that is what I wanted to play to you for the audience. And at this point, the computer broke down in the middle of the Presidius presentation, and now I can't find a way to let you hear that piece. The says, even though he is not interested, that explanation, but let's go on to the second part of that speech. And we're going to deal with the second part of it and let's start out with dealing with lines 128, 129, 130, and 131. Without going through the whole passage, let us start with the first four lines. The lines are not in prose. The words in each speech are not to be spread across the page from margin to margin. It's to keep the rhythm on there. Oh, whoopee. Maybe we'll just have to see what happens. Typical of Shakespeare, this line has 10 syllables. He and she, he and we, call this blank verse. And you have to deal with those that coming along. You're in charge. That's me. The first line consists of odd syllables, unstressed, and even syllables, stressed. Maintain this passage requires precise pronunciation. Note that the third word is pronounced in one syllable. And notice they put the apostrophe before taking out the E there. So that's loved. Don't say loved, it's loved. The apostrophe indicates to merge this into a single syllable. The last verb, invited, does not contain an apostrophe. That E right in the middle, he says that stays there. And each of these three syllables are pronounced. Invited, invited, three syllables. The next line has 10 syllables, but the original printed spelling, the line 128, leaves out the vowel in E, loved, before the final D, and the final E in questioned. Not saying questioned, but questioned. The spelling on this page is a guide to the performer of how to orally say that line. The sight of that line and the use of the eyes provides a guide to the performer, but the performer requires those in the audience to use their ears, to become oral critics, sound critics. The next two lines, from year to year, the battles, sieges, fortunes, lines 130 and 131. You see line 130 starts out written in 10 syllables and adds an 11th syllable, a final unstressed syllable, unstressed, not stressed, an unstressed syllable. That is very common in Shakespeare's plays. You can put in an 11th, it's unstressed.
That line seems to have 12 syllables.
Say this again?
That line seems to have 12 syllables.
From year to year, the battles, sieges, fortunes. Fortunes.
Yeah. From year to year is four, the battles.
Okay. good. That's what I want you to come accustomed to counting the syllables, because that is what the audience has to do and to keep the rhythm of that line. And the line after that is highly unusual. 130, that's an unusual 11th syllable. Line 31 is highly unusual. There are just a few of these. And that's made, that line is reduced to 2 feet. And it causes attention to the audience that it stops right there. That's something special point. In line 132 and 133 are significant lines. Compare the modern printing in Yale University Press, done, which came out in 1918, to the first folio published in 1623, about 10 years after the death of Shakespeare. You can compare those two ways to write that line. And you notice that Yale University, they put E-V-E-N. It causes the attention of the modern reader to divide that into 2 syllables. The folio draws attention to the reader that in has to be 1 syllable there. In line 132, blank verse requires 5 feet. In line 132, it makes this line makes this line nearly every other, let's see. Makes this line unlike nearly every other line of Shakespeare. Did the original printer leave out the apostrophe in Eden, or making this line similar to others? The problem is put on the actor of how to perform, of how to say this line. We can go to line 133. And again, compare the printing from 133. In the modern one, there's a space between the two and the. And after the, there's an apostrophe and another space before very. That seems to make that into 4 syllables. But in the earlier folio, the original printers pushed the 2 and the and the very, pushed them all together like that. Now, those early printers indicate that that should be pronounced as 3 syllables with the stress in the first syllable of very, to very. Not to the very, but to very. The printer shows this, the actor and the audience of how that line should come out in rhythm. The following lines, wherein I spake of most disastrous chances, moving accidents by flood and field, of hairbreadth escapes in the imminent deadly breach. I wish you could hear what Booth was saying that those lines.
We're working on that.
After we at the end, I guess. But you can see at line 134. It begins with a stressed syllable. That trochee, that's very common at the beginning of a line or never in the middle of a line and after a mark of punctuation. In the third line, we come with a normal iambic for the first foot, but the second foot, those are a combination of two stressed syllables. Both have the same impact. So there are three impact sounds to say that line. Of hairbreadth skates, those three have to have heavy stress there, and then that tooth imminent, it has to be pushed together to make a single sound.
Ready to go. Just plug it in. We have the Edwin Booth cylinder to play from the web. And I should tell you, you have 5 minutes.
Okay. And then we can hear that speech, but it causes real problems for the performer not to spread it out into the to hair breath escapes in the imminent deadly breach without any rhythm to it. It has to be built into by the way Shakespeare indicates of how to say that. And at this point, we maybe are up to hearing Booth's recording.
There's a couple here. Which one? Is this all the same one? Or
yes. Yeah. There's only one recording. Okay. Just pop out any one of them.
Okay.
Well, it's while he's getting that sound to come up. In what I'm doing, I would end on this section devoted to this tragedy play and would move over to a passage from one of Shakespeare's comedy, As You Like It. I ran into frustrations in dealing with that. The speech I was dealing with, it's a very famous speech. And with that famous speech, I could find a recording and I could not get a copy. I was directed over to Sony to get the license.
Whoops, sorry.
We'll go right back to Booth.
I ran it through from the boy's days to the very boy.
The quick thinking of Patrick Feaster, who managed to wrest the booth cylinder off the internet in order to... Thanks very much, Patrick. At this point, it is now 13 minutes of one. We are supposed to reconvene at 1:45, so that makes kind for of a short lunch hour. Eat fast. However, indeed. Yeah. However, I do want to ask if any of you have any questions of Dr. O'Brien.
Dr. O'Brien, if we were to see, I haven't seen Othello perform in many years. If we were to see 10 contemporary productions of Othello, would we hear the actors accurately
That's why I got involved in this. When I started dealing with recordings, I noticed some words were mispronounced with too many syllables, missing the rhythm of the line. What I have found, and I've gone through 28 plays by Shakespeare, basically an error for a mistake in the meter, mistake in the pronunciation, comes up about 1 out of 10 lines. Part of with that handout. Are you ready? Here's a quicker if we can pop right into this.
Sure, go ahead.
A-R-E. How do you say this word?
R.
Say R. How many syllables?
One.
All ones? The second, O-U-R.
R.
How many syllables does it have?
One.
Two. I'm an Iowan, one.
No, hold up your hand for R. How many for one? Hold up for one. How many vote up a hand for two? That's come. Now let's H-O-U-R. How many syllables does it have? Two? How many vote for two? How many vote for one? Well, let me tell you the accurate on this. You can see this for the handout. There was no dictionary for Shakespeare. The dictionary came out a century and a half after he was dead. Then, with that first dictionary, did not have a pronunciation guide. Then it comes up to 1770 for the first pronunciation guide. And you can see this from a piece of paper. These three words have identical pronunciations. R, R, R. And there is, in the Fool's Speech, if we had time to play that, you could have two actors from England and America, and they make the same mistake hour. That whole line, and they mispronounce that line identically, mistake that same pronunciation. They pronounce it out. So that is what this was involved in, to alert the audience and alert critics of not just for the meaning of what is in the play, but the rhythm is built into it. Let me say, it goes into how to interpret, and it's the problem of the actor. It deals with the character of that role. Okay. Good. By the way, what are you going to say? Anything about Booth?
Pronounces M-Y as me all the time. I didn't notice that.
It seems to me in my ear, he never says even. He says E. Right? You can hear it. He snaps it right to the monosyllabic pronunciation. Mm-hmm. I think there's one other mistake that's serious. But yeah, it's what this whole presentation was to make you alert with your ears, not with your eyes to read it on the page, but to keep your ear for the rhythm of that line of poetry.
Thank you very much.